This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about the future of food. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Globally, the production of coffee and tea are threatened by climate change. Changing temperatures and droughts are affecting the quantity and quality of the harvest. So, what will that mean for these beloved beverages and the buzz of energy they provide us? Grant Hill looked into the future of caffeine.
People adapt their eating and drinking habits to new products and market forces. Take this for example. In 2015, a survey asked 1,000 Americans about their preferred brand of a breakfast staple, maple syrup. Only about a quarter of respondents chose a product derived from actual maple trees as a favorite. The rest sided with big-name brands that rely on corn syrup rather than real sap. For pollsters, it was no mystery as to why. At the time, real maple syrup cost more than 5 times as much as imitators, a price trend that is likely to continue as climate change bears down on real maple syrup production. So, lots of people have already gotten used to the fake stuff. But that's syrup, more of a breakfast condiment than a necessity. What about the thing that many of us, certainly me, consider the most important part of our mornings? Caffeine. The psychostimulant that 4 out of 5 Americans consume every day, according to the FDA. As climate change threatens production of tea and coffee, where will that morning kick come from?
For a lot of people, they're surprised that we actually consume less coffee than our grandparents did.
That's Murray Carpenter. He's a journalist and author of
Caffeinated: How Our Daily Habit Helps, Hurts, and Hooks Us.
He says that a shift from natural caffeine sources like coffee and tea to something different, something synthetic, has actually already happened.
We consume a lot more Coke and soft drinks, and more recently, energy drinks. So it's been a big shift.
According to Murray's research, that shift happened all the way back in 1975, when soft drinks officially supplanted coffee as America's favorite overall beverage.
Why that happened, you know, I think you'd have to go to, you know, some really aggressive and terrific marketing for soft drinks.
And along with the ad campaigns, Murray says it was caffeine, not high fructose corn syrup or trace amounts of cocaine, that fueled the success of companies like Coca-Cola.
When Coke, for example, was really getting started, its primary source of caffeine was from Monsanto, which was then sort of a fledgling chemical company. And they were extracting caffeine from like waste tea leaves. So, you know, sort of substandard tea leaves. But of course, the caffeine would be just as good as any.
After World War II, companies like Monsanto and Pfizer no longer wanted to rely on importing foreign caffeine crops for a fix. So they started to synthesize caffeine from raw chemicals. Today, most of the caffeine found in sodas, energy drinks, and other processed products is synthetic, generally made from chemicals like urea and methyl chloride. For decades, synthetic caffeine was produced right here in the U.S. Then, one afternoon in 1995, a mysterious yellow cloud began to waft over the Thames River in Groton, Connecticut. It came from a manufacturing plant run by Pfizer, from their caffeine building. It was a leak, nitrogen oxide, a pollutant that can be harmful to those with asthma and weakened respiratory systems, spewed from the facilities, workers evacuated. Murray says that after that incident, caffeine production and its pollution was mostly moved overseas, especially to China. Murray wanted to see that production firsthand, but it was,
in a word, frustrating. You know, I approached caffeine manufacturers in Germany, India, China.
They all either said no or just didn't respond, except for one Chinese facility.
There was one plant that hadn't actually said no, and it's the world's largest caffeine plant.
They didn't outright reject Murray's request, so he traveled there.
So it was in kind of a rundown industrial park.
Murray said the area stunk, like cat urine. When he arrived at the plant's gate, workers were friendly, but ultimately refused him entry. And he's not the only one who had a hard time getting into these places.
Caffeine is like a lot of drugs. A lot of our drugs or, you know, pharmaceutical components are now produced overseas. And so, like many of the other pharmaceutical products, FDA inspectors don't have necessarily an easy time getting access to these plants and doing their inspections. Just from the regulatory record, I know there was at least one plant in China where they did have like really filthy conditions.
Dirty mops, rusty equipment, workers wearing open-toe sandals.
And that 15 months after FDA inspectors went through there and found some really nasty conditions, Coke was still buying caffeine from that plant.
Murray notes that it would take a lot of impurities in synthetic caffeine to cause bodily harm to consumers. But the truth is, nobody really seems to care where their caffeine comes from.
Overall awareness among consumers of whether caffeine is natural or synthetic is fairly low. However, there are brands that make that use of natural caffeine sources a prominent part of its overall branding, particularly in the energy drink segment.
That's Caleb Bryant. He's a market researcher at a firm called Mintel.
I write reports on the U.S. beverage industry.
Caleb watches this space very closely, and he says although the energy drink sector has experienced huge growth, the importance placed on the caffeine source is still more of a gimmick than a real concern. At the same time, he notes interest in good old coffee is up among young consumers.
It's a growing industry, particularly ready-to-drink coffees, so canned bottled coffee beverages. Growth stemming in large part from millennial and Gen Z consumers. Gen Z in particular are huge fans of iced coffee beverages.
But with climate change threatening coffee and tea production, he says companies are keenly aware of the changes that might lie ahead and how they'll have to adjust.
You know, at the moment, supply chain issues are continuing to wreak havoc on the food and beverage industry, but I think brands are taking a more long view of this, where climate change is that existential threat to natural coffee production. And it's really ultimately like, what is the future have in store for us? Are future consumers going to be able to enjoy universally loved products such as coffee, wine, chocolate, or is it going to be more of a luxury good or even more synthetic products on the market?
As Caleb says, the outlook right now is existential, but he says companies are already working on alternative coffee products.
Made from upcycled date pits.
They don't sound quite as enticing as normal coffee.
And it's made from ingredients such as barley, rye, chickpeas, and chicory.
And some products would definitely require adding caffeine from some other sources.
A team of researchers in Finland created the first cup of coffee produced using cellular agriculture.
This is an approach where you grow the plant cells in a lab, in a petri dish, basically. Whatever tomorrow has in store. Journalist Murray Carpenter is confident that while consumers will definitely stay wired one way or another, the future of caffeine will be a bit less varied.
We have been in probably a golden age of abundance and availability of some really top-notch, well-produced, tasty, caffeinated products. I think that that production will definitely be challenged in the future.
That story was reported by Grant Hill.